change the color of the ribbon upon it?
Recording.
Okay, gentlemen, hate to break up your little meeting here, but we got another meeting.
Oh, another meeting?
We just thought this was time for social.
Okay. We'll call the meeting to order. Our first order of business is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Lank, have there been any additions, corrections, deletions to the agenda?
No, the agenda stays as written.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move we approve the agenda as circulated.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the agenda as circulated. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Our next item is the approval of the minutes of the June 18th and June 26th, 2008 meetings.
Gentlemen, the minutes of June 18th and June 26th of 2008 have been corrected for information provided by commission members and Mr. Robertson.
Mr. Chairman, regarding the minutes of June 18, 2008, and the minutes of June 26, 2008, my motion is for approval as corrected.
Second.
So moved and seconded to approve the minutes of June 18th and June 26, 2008, as amended. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the point in our meeting where it's time for our public hearings. And for those of you who are not frequent attenders here at Planning and Zoning, I would like to direct your attention to our esteemed counsel to my left and your right, who is going to share with you a few well-chosen words about the way we conduct our meetings and the way we would like you to conduct yourselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As this chairman stated, this is the time and the place for the scheduled public hearings of the Planning and Zoning Commission. These proceedings will be conducted under the rules of the Planning and Zoning Commission that were adopted in October of 1998 and recently amended. All commission matters are discussed and voted on publicly in open meetings. Everyone present is invited to stay throughout the commission meeting to view the commission's deliberations and voting on the pending applications. In addition, these proceedings are broadcast on the internet at sussexcountyde.gov. Everyone in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. Please do not do anything that distracts from these proceedings and follow the directions of the chairman. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, we ask that you take the time now to switch it off or turn it to silent service. The hearings will be conducted as follows this evening. First, the application will be announced by the chairman. Then the director will review the application and any agency comments and correspondence that has been received to date. The applicant will then present its case to explain the application to the commission and may present any exhibits and testimony that supports the application. The commission may question the applicant and its witnesses at any time. After the applicant's presentation, the chairman will invite public comment. Supporters will go first, followed by any opponents. If there's a spokesperson or an attorney representing an organized group, we ask that that person identify themselves and speak first. Whenever speaking to the commission, please identify yourself by name and place of residence for the record. We ask that you be concise in your statements and avoid being repetitious. The chairman does have the authority to set reasonable time limits on public comment or to terminate testimony that is irrelevant or unduly repetitive. The commission may ask questions of both supporters and opponents, but no direct questioning or cross-examination of witnesses or applicants will be permitted. All questions should be directed to the commission, and the commission may direct the question to the appropriate person if the commission thinks it's necessary. There will be no rebuttal by the applicant unless requested or permitted by the commission. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir, we thank you. Our first public hearing this evening is actually a continuation of change of zone 1651 Caldera Properties versus Indian River 5 LLC that was tabled on April 24th, 2008. I'll entertain a motion to place it back into...
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, back in on April 24th of 2008, the hearing was commenced, and Mr. Lank gave his introductory comments, so that's all in the record. And then Mr. Smith made a motion to table the public hearing until tonight, which was seconded by Mr. Gordy. So I'd ask that Mr. Smith make the motion to lift it from the table at this point.
Should second.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, regarding this change of zone number 1651 Caldera Properties, Indian River 5 LLC, my motion is to take the public hearing and reopen it at this time.
Second.
Moved and seconded to lift condition or change of zone number 1651 Caldera Properties, Indian River 5 LLC from the table and continue the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. All right, then. The chair recognizes Mr. Fuqua.
Don't need to read that.
Yeah, I guess you might want to.
Do you want to, do we need to read the?
Yeah, why don't you, rather than all the agency comments.
Okay, Mr. Fuqua, I'm sorry to make you get up. I wanted to tell you to sit down again, but you're welcome to stay there if you like, but Mr. Lang needs to read it into the record.
Just one brief.
Just for the record. This is an application, change of zone 1651 of Caldera Properties, Indian River 5 LLC, to amend the comprehensive zoning map from a MR medium density residential district to a MR RPC medium density residential district residential planned community for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, for land lying southeast of Road 346A and 3,100 feet east of Road 346, to be located on 78.228 acres, more or less. For the record, the applicants did provide an additional exhibit booklet in June of 2008. Which
slide
is
your microphone forward a little bit, Mr. Lang.
Sir?
People are having trouble hearing you.
Me? Have trouble hearing me?
You're the only one talking.
The applicant did provide us with an additional exhibit booklet in June of 2008, which is a part of the record. It's a large exhibit booklet. All the commissioners have copies. And I think that's all I have right now, gentlemen.
All right, sir. We thank you. Before we commence, is there anyone here with a particular interest in this application who might like to speak later? Okay, very good. And also, we'll get to you here shortly. Those of you who might wish to hear and see what's going on, I would encourage you to simply move up. This is not church. We are not going to preach at you. Lightning will not strike you, might strike us, but not you. So feel free to get up, move around quietly if you're having difficulty hearing. We have a microphone system. But these meetings tend to be long and lengthy, and if I ask these guys to shout, well, in an hour or two, they're not going to have a voice to shout with. So that being said, Mr. Fuqua, floor is yours.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen. For the record, my name is Jim Fuqua. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown, and I represent the applicant. With me, seated over here, is Rich Polk with the applicant, Jason Palkowitz from Acrone Engineering, and Ed Linnae from Environmental Resources, Inc., as Mr. Lang stated, there was a revised project booklet that was submitted and a revised plan, which I believe you gentlemen have a copy of. And again, I want to thank you on behalf of my client and Mrs. Barbara Murray and her attorney, Mr. Malkowitz, for tabling this back when it was originally scheduled in, I think it was April or beginning of May. And as you recall, we were trying to work on this, and I can tell you that you're action hasn't been in vain. There's been extensive good faith discussions ongoing. They're still ongoing. We are hopefully going to be reaching a final settlement, but we are close to getting there. And as you can see, we're all seated in the same part of the room tonight. And
on the same side of the room.
That's
okay.
A good sign.
Okay.
This is an application for an RPC.
Quickly, just for the commission, I'm going to ask the their counsel, do you agree with statements he's made about having reached a
yes.
Could you come up and state your name for you for us, please? I know this is a little bit unusual, but this whole thing is a little bit unusual. So
My name is Michael Malkowitz, law firm of Barros, McNamara, Malkowitz and Taylor.
Thanks.
And I represent Miss Murray and the corporation that owns the adjoining piece of property that's up for application tonight. And Mr. Fuqua has accurately represented where we are right now. And my comments later on, assuming Mr. Fuqua was going to say everything I anticipate him saying, is they're going to be limited on the in support side to less than probably a minute. So you don't have to anticipate 3 hours of me.
Well, we thank you for that. All right, sir, Mr. Fuqua.
Okay, this is an application for an RPC overlay designation for a residential development, which is now going to contain 71 single-family condo units and recreational facilities. The entire property contains approximately 78 acres. A large amount of that, 54 acres, are classified as state wetlands, leaving a net upland area of approximately 23.8 acres. The site is located on the east side of County Road 346, which is Walters Bluff Road. The site is just east of Tuckahoe Acres, and it's north of the Bethany Forest subdivision. And this application is a bit of deja vu, at least for some of the commissioners. And what I'd like to do is kind of explain a little bit of the history, particularly for the benefit of Mr. Burton and Mr. Johnson, who weren't on the commission.
I'm sorry.
Well, were you here then? Okay. Then I guess just Mr. Burton, who wasn't on the commission at the time of the original hearing. So I'm just going to summarize that history. If you have any questions, you can stop me. But the land involved in this application was part of a large amount of land that was owned by the Walters family for generations back in the 1840s. The land was inherited by Doris Murray in 1973. Mr. and Mrs. Murray sold the land to a corporation called Walters Bluff Corporation, which had an application to develop it as a large residential development with a large marina. That RPC was approved by the county back in the 70s, and as we can now relate to, in the 1970s, the bottom kind of fell out of the real estate market. That development never occurred, and unfortunately, the properties ended up being foreclosed upon that the developer owned. A portion of the property was reacquired by Mr. and Mrs. Murray, and 79 acres was purchased by a corporation called ASG Associates. My clients subsequently purchased the land from ASG Associates in 2002. In 2004, an RPC application, which was very similar to this application but not identical to it, was filed with the county. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a hearing in 2005 and issued its decision in May of 2005. The hearing was in March of 2005. And that application was opposed by some residents, and in particular, Mrs. Murray, the adjacent property owner. And of course, Mrs. Murray, it was actually Mrs. Murray's parents who originally had owned the property. Over a period of time, prior to that hearing, Mrs. Murray and Caldera had held extensive discussions over the development of the property. Caldera was interested in purchasing a right-of-way, and nothing was reached at that time. And because of that, as presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission back at that time, Planning and Zoning recommended denial of that application, and that was because the actual property itself is outlined in yellow here. So it's this piece here with this tail here, which was actually an access easement back to the road. And unfortunately for my client, this tail basically goes through wetlands. The original proposal for this development had a bridge that was coming through a large portion of that property. And I don't recall the exact length. I think it was about 1,300 feet. And I think it's correct to say Planning and Zoning was not too impressed with having a bridge of that length. And Planning and Zoning made a recommendation that this be denied. After the Sussex County Council held a hearing on it, it was approved by Sussex County Council, subject to a number of conditions, and one of the conditions from the council was that there could be no bridge, that it would have to actually be an access road, either located on our property or located on adjacent property. And basically, they left it up to the applicant to figure out how to do that. That council decision actually was appealed to the Court of Chancery, and obviously there was time and effort spent on that appeal by both sides. In October of 2007, Master Glasscock issued a decision on behalf of the Court of Chancery, basically declaring the county council action invalid. And the reason for that decision really didn't have anything to do with the merits of the application or the actual land use matter. What the court said was that the council failed to state, for the record, the reasons they were making that decision. And I think you're very familiar with that. That's why Mr. Robertson urges you to state for the record the reasons and why you, as you know, as a matter of course now, give very articulated and specific reasons for your decisions. So basically, after 4 years of all of that, it ended up kind of back where it started from. And basically, my clients refiled on the new application, which actually is before you tonight. And I will go on and explain that, but let me get to part of the application, just some of the boilerplate. as to some of the specific elements of the development, water for this development for both consumption and fire protection will be by Tidewater Utilities, which, as you know, is a public utility company regulated by the Public Service Commission. Sewer will be public sewer. The site is in the Holtz Landing planning area of the South Coastal Sussex Sewer District, and we understand that the cost of the transmission infrastructure would be the responsibility of the developer, and that probably will involve a pump station that basically will connect to the county sewer, but it will be Sussex County Sewer. Other utilities serving the sites would be Delaware Electric Co-op for electric, Verizon for telephone, and Mediacom for cable TV. As to the traffic impact, the site has or will have access to Walters Bluff Road. No TIS was required by DelDOT due to the size of the development. Again, we don't anticipate any significant traffic impact. A number of studies were done in designing the development. They include, obviously, surveys by McCrone Engineering. There was a cultural resource study done by Dr. Ed Otter that did disclose, which was known, that there's a small old family cemetery on the site, and the boundary of that cemetery have been determined, and they will be properly delineated and preserved, not disturbed in any way, and maintained by the Homeowners Association of the development. There was a phase one environmental site assessment performed by Atlantic Resource Management. There's a letter from Fish and Wildlife that there is no threatened or endangered species known to inhabit the site. And there were wetland delineations performed by Ed Linnae. And there was a final determination of the wetland line that's been reviewed and agreed to by DENREC. As far as the land use aspects under the Sussex County Code, the state places this in a level three area under the state spending strategies. The existing Sussex County Comprehensive Plan designates this as the environmentally sensitive developing area. As you know, under the comp plan, the environmentally sensitive developing area is designated as a growth area. It's described as a basically a growth area with special environmental design and protection requirements. That district is encouraged to use the extension of central wastewater systems to protect the inland bays and the expansion of public water systems, which, again, we will be doing. The future land use map shows this site not only in the environmentally sensitive development area, but that also confirms, as is shown on the zoning map, that this parcel is zoned MR, medium density residential, under the Sussex County zoning ordinance and comp plan. And the purpose of the MR zoning district is to provide for a medium density residential development. So two very relevant factors regarding this property is that under the current land use plan, it is in a development district, the environmentally sensitive development district, and it is currently zoned MR and has been zoned since 1974 MR. And again, that designates vacant land that is considered appropriate for medium density development in the future. The formula for figuring out density under the RPC, as you know, is taking the subtracting state wetlands, subtracting the actual roads or 25% of the site to come up with a net development area, and then multiplying that times the permitted density for that district. Roughly, that would permit approximately, I believe it's 77 units on this site under the straight formula. And as I said before, we are requesting 71 units. So it does comply with the density requirements of the RPC ordinance. The site itself and the proposed development, we believe, is in character with the area. The general area here is extensively developed with residential development along the inland bays. If you go west from the site, there is an aerial map here, which, again, I won't go into detail, but here's the site right here. This is Tuckahoe Acres right over here. And as I said, if you go west from the site, basically Tuckahoe Acres, which is a campground, I believe it's approximately 500 campground sites in there. West of that is Holtz Landing State Park, which provides boat launching and recreational opportunities in the area. And then as you move further west, there's a development, Ellis Point, Cripple Creek, which you know is a residential development, and it also has an 18-hole golf course and some other developments in that area, Bay Colony, Fairway Villas, Mallard Landing, Seagrass, and the preserves at Iron Landing. And then south of the site, coming down on that map, is the Bethany Forest subdivision, Bay Forest RPC, and Bethany Bay. So we believe there's extensive residential use in the area, and this would be consistent with that use. I'm going to have Jason go over the site plan with you, but before I turn that over to him, I do want to summarize the main differences in this application from the original application that was presented to you. I mentioned the cemetery. The cemetery boundaries have been delineated, and as I mentioned, they will be totally preserved and maintained by the HOA. Subsequent to the original public hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission, as requested by DENREC, the state wetland line was redelineated, and the 50-foot wetland buffer was adjusted to coincide with that revised delineation. And that was done by Ed Linnae. That was reviewed and approved by DENREC. And in the record, there is a letter from DENREC dated April 10, 2008, which acknowledges that that line and hence the 50-foot buffer line are agreed to by DENREC. As we will be explaining, when we revised this site plan, there were a few sites, units, that were relocated as a result of those buffer adjustments, but the total, actually, as I mentioned, is 71. The original application was 72, so it has been reduced by one. As a result of some of the comments that were received in the PLUS process, the original plan had areas where there were going to be boat docks and piers and pedestrian boardwalks over on and across the state wetlands line. And based on those comments, that is all being deleted. So there will be no boat docks, there will be no boardwalks, there'll be no piers located on the site. And that was a significant point that was raised by DENREC. And then most importantly, and this is really what we've spent a lot of time and effort on, was the access road. And as I mentioned, it was originally proposed to be approximately a 1,300-foot bridge, which, as I said, was not really popular with anyone. When we refiled this, we had begun a permitting process to basically, in compliance with all state and federal regulations, to fill a roadway area, to bring a roadway in that would involve mitigation that we would have to do, assuming those permits could be obtained. That's kind of where this matter stood back in April when we were about to come to you. And at about that time, fortunately, the parties recognized that there probably was a good opportunity to get together and to speak some more. And after your granting us that opportunity to do that, we have done that. And the parties resumed discussions on an upland entrance that would basically be by way of an easement across the Murray's property. And as I mentioned, we've not yet reached a final agreement, but we are proceeding in good faith that type of agreement is going to be finalized in the near future. And I do want to stress that as a result of those discussions, what we're presenting to you tonight is a design with an access road on uplands that will be on an easement across the Murray property. We're not tonight requesting or proposing any other type of alternative access. We're strictly presenting this as if it will have the entrance across Mrs. Murray's property. And let me just explain that in a little more detail. As I said, this is our property here. This is the property that Mrs. Murray owns. This is our property here. That's where the original bridge was going to go. By creating an easement on the Murray property, it'll permit this road to stay on the uplands that are owned by Mrs. Murray on an easement to come into the site. So that's the main difference, and it's a significant difference because it basically results in no encroachment whatsoever of any wetlands, and in fact, a 50-foot buffer from the wetlands of any improvements on this site. So all of, if not most of, the environmental concerns that were present at the original hearing basically are significantly reduced or addressed by that. And when I mention that we're having ongoing negotiations, I mean they're ongoing continually. And since we've done this plan, there's been some further tweaking on this. It's not significant, but where we are right now is slightly different than that entrance, and that is this plan here, which Jason will show you. And basically, the road still comes in the same way, but rather than come down here, this is where the rec facility would be. It's going to come in further south and curve in here. So that resulted in some units kind of being just moved slightly, but then the entrance coming in here. And with that, Jason, I'll turn it over to you to review the site plan.
Jason Palkowitz with McCrone. Jim touched on a lot of things, so I'll just hit the highlights. As mentioned, there'll be 71 units proposed on the site. Stormwater management is proposed with sand filters and other BMPs on site. No ponds are proposed at this time. We are only dealing with water quality on the site. A TMDL analysis was performed as part of our plus submittal, and it meets the required reduction. Sidewalks are provided on one side of the road to allow access to the clubhouse and the pool. As Jim also mentioned, none of the units or the improvements are in the 50-foot buffer. Parking is provided within the unit and in the driveways, and where the driveways are too short, other parking spaces have been provided to meet the requirements. And street lighting will be provided. Also, there will be landscaping and buffers along here, along the Murray's property. About it.
Okay. Gentlemen, I have prepared proposed findings of facts and conditions, which I'll ask Mr. Lank to pass down to you. And in conclusion, subject, of course, to your questions, I again want to stress that the proposed development will be accessed by an uplands roadway on the Murray property, which would be on this easement that, again, we have not reached a final agreement on, but we continue to work toward that result, and that would be the only access to the property. I mean, I have to state for the record that if we cannot finalize that agreement, then I'm probably be back before you with something else, but as I said, in good faith, the parties have been working diligently toward that result, and I mean, I'm very confident that is going to be accomplished, mainly because it's ultimately in my client's best interest. I believe it's in Mrs. Murray's best interest, and probably most importantly, it's probably in the best interest of everyone, because it results in much less impact and just a much better development. I do want to state for the record that in the conditions that I submitted to you, which are pretty normal type conditions, but number 15 does state that the access to the site shall be as approved by all applicable regulatory agencies and shall be by way of an upland access easement over the property adjacent to the site, as shown on the preliminary site plan presented at the July 10, 2008 planning and zoning hearing. And I say that with the understanding, which you know, that if this is approved, we'll have to come back before you for site plan approval. And as I said, we're continuing to have discussions, so that entrance could be adjusted one way or another, but would be approximately where it's located. And with that, that's everything we have to present, other than any questions you may have. And as I said, we have Jason here and Ed Linnae here also to assist in answering those questions.
All right, sir. Well, we'll see if anyone has any questions for you. And we'll start with Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Fuqua, Jason. On the access, and you were somewhat brief on that, and I will be as well. You don't have an agreement now for an access that is on property that the applicant owns. Is
correct.
That is correct. What you said was if you could not make out an agreement that trusting that you would be back here in front of us with something else, how would that take place? What would that scenario be?
I mean, I think what I would maybe suggest would be that you would leave the record open for us to present to you our final determination as to that agreement. And again, we'll waive any time that you have to make a recommendation. The county council has actually scheduled this because of the end of the summer. It's scheduled for September 9th, I believe it is. So we have a considerable period of time before the county council hearing. So if you would give us the opportunity to continue to work on this and the ability to present to you our final determination, whatever that may be.
So does that, and there again, I'm trying to get a handle as to how I should best proceed and serve the interest of the commission as well as everyone involved who should look at this more not site plan specific and more under on the underlying zoning. Is that
well, I think it's I mean, again, I'm working that it's site plan specific almost. There could be some tweaks to do to it, but I'm just staying positive that we're working in good faith. Everything I've seen, I think we're going to get it worked out, and that's the way I'm going to continue to approach it.
I promise to be brief on the access, and I will be. The I think you've drawn out that with the you pointed out the changes that you'd made in this application from the other one, the state wetland line. Mr. Lanay's readjusted. You've made strides on the cemetery boundaries. Did hear you say sidewalks would be provided on one side only. In the motion back a couple years ago that I made, which was a motion for denial for the project at that time, and looked on, acted on favorably by the other members of the commission. I put in there, purpose of an RPC is to create, quote, superior living environments, unquote, and to utilize design ingenuity. In this case, neither has been established, was what I put down. The design appears to have the primary goal of establishing as many homes as possible on a very limited upland area of this parcel. How does this site plan this time change my mind in that regard?
Well, again, as we've already discussed, through the access easement, almost most of the environmental concerns that were presented have been addressed. We're complying with the 50-foot wetland buffer, which, again, further mitigates any environmental impact. And this parcel of land, unlike a lot of applications, was already approved as an RPC, you know, back in the 70s, admittedly, but it was already approved as an RPC. And has been zoned MR, medium density, I guess it's over 30 years now. So it's basically always been, almost since the beginning of zoning in Sussex County, it's been zoned as a medium density piece. The RPC, of course, is single family condos. They'll be separated, which again we think presents a more desirable community type environment than townhouse buildings or you know, stack type buildings, less blockage. The design of the units, I won't say everyone has a perfect view, but every unit has a tremendous view across the bay in terms of the design of the actual physical structures. And you get beyond that, I think it gets subjective. You know, we feel that it's a superior design at an exceptional location. In fact, a very unique location.
And Jason, did you position the buildings with the sight lines to take advantage of those views and things, or to maximize the upland area?
A little bit of both. But if you'll notice the site plan, all of the units, save the ones Mrs. Murray's property all look out over the wetlands and over the water. So they all have very good views.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, too, we, because of the, again, the environmental concerns expressed by DENREC, we're really using the view as the amenity of this site. I mean, that is what really this sells this site. And as I mentioned, there's going to be no boat dock. There's going to be no boardwalks. There's going to be no piers out in the water or crossing of the wetlands in any way. So all of those natural environmental features remain untouched.
In your tab two, you give us a capsule of Master Glasscock's decision, which I'd gone online and had read. Is that your bullet point there? You're stating on the record that Sussex County Council did not create a sufficient record of its reasons for the affirmative decision. Was that the highlight, the only point, or?
It was, as I don't know whether Mr. Robertson's familiar with the decision, but as I read it, that was the only point. In other words, the court said is, we can't tell you whether this is a good or bad decision because the council didn't tell us why, adequately tell us why they made that decision. So it never got beyond that.
Thank you. In your tab three, is this under the environmental assessment public facility? Or is this your the contents of your report, or is this this is so I can understand as I reread this book, or is this what should be provided about the drainage design system, et cetera, et cetera? It's in your tab three of the June book.
Tab three. That's the one conformance with Sussex County zoning ordinance.
Under B, environmentally sensitive development district overlay.
B, environmentally sensitive. Yeah, that's just under the environmentally sensitive overlay ordinance. There is a provision in there that you need to submit a report addressing certain aspects. So that's just complying with that ordinance.
Okay.
So that's from us.
The next points down are that report, those Roman numerals,
yes.
1 through 11,
yes.
12. All right, thank you. Riverview is in compliance, this site plan, with the conservation zone?
As far as I know, it wasn't raised by anyone, but as far as I know, that is the only requirement in the conservation zone is a lot width requirement if you're bordering the actual water, I believe. In other words, if you're oceanfront, waterfront, bayfront, I think your lot width has to be 150 feet. We don't have any lots, obviously, because it's condo.
Thank you. Of the existing forest woodlands, how much will need to be removed, and how much will remain intact?
I'll have to defer that to Jason.
I don't have the exact number, but the roadway alignment saves a lot more of those woods now, because we're not cutting through the trees or the wetlands. The only existing forest stand is this little spot right here, and it looks like we're taking out approximately 60% of it. It's not very big.
Uh, In the layout on the site plan with the with the parking, adequate parking spaces provided for each unit?
Yes. Yes. One within the unit and one exposed to the
units as proposed, are they going to have garages?
Parking underneath,
is it garages?
Yes, garages.
Garages. I know one of the other concerns the commission had that was about evacuation in case of high tides and all. Are you stating that should you work out this other access with the adjoining property owner, that issue would be lessened?
Yes. The entrance is actually a boulevard entrance, which should also help.
Can I expand upon that?
Please.
Would the applicant be willing to provide for an evacuation plan where you would sit down and meet with the emergency agencies and resolve some the typical condition of approval?
Yeah, I mean, that's similar to other developments that have been done in that area.
Thank you.
That would be fine.
What did you share with the commission what the position of the wetland subaqueous land section is as far as your proposed access? What
the new access?
Yes.
I think they would be elated. Is that the right word? Denrec, you know, really did not want the other entrance through the wetlands. And did not want the new proposed entrance that we had that involved filling. And in fact, they, on the previous, not this entrance, but the one that we were going to be proposing, they were coming back to us and saying, rather than do this filling, we'd prefer to see some smaller bridges in there. So we were getting back into the bridge thing. But that's all history. This is the application we're presenting. This is all on uplands. There's no wetland encroachment. And as I said, it really complies with the 50-foot setback from all wetlands. So Denrec, it would be, this is really what they wanted.
So if you work out that agreement, then there's WSLS doesn't get involved in this.
No, I'm not correct.
And you don't have a pending permit with them in case you need alternative access?
No.
Should you need to go back through that permitting process, what would the time of that? You mentioned a possible time frame if along with this. What sort of time do they take to review and give okays for?
I'd have to defer to Ed on that, but it's not quick.
If you're going to speak,
sir, I need you to come up and give us your name and get you on the record here. We recognize you, but the tape doesn't.
I'm Edward Lene from Environmental Resources Incorporated. Company's located at 62 North DuPont Highway in Selbyville, Delaware.
Thank you. Go ahead.
As part of trying to work toward this agreement, the application from Denrec has been withdrawn. So at this point, we're not an active applicant. We could basically reactivate that process if there would need be. We're through several site visits and some iterations of some alternative designs. As Jim mentioned, Denrec has been looking, requested that we consider some shorter bridge sections to be incorporated into a filled road section. So, you know, that we had been working on all that. Assuming if there was an agreement, I would imagine that is a design that would be proceeded with, and probably to get to a decision point process with Denrec and work out, a number of details that would still be remaining to work out, I would say we'd be working another 6 to 9 months before we got to a position where the record would be sufficient to make a permit decision.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I may have some questions as far as I've read and got some notes here on the response to the plus comments, but I want to let the other commissioners have an opportunity, and so that's it for me for now. About the, I do have the plus comments. Are there TAC comments? Or did this not have to go?
Yes, sir. I have TAC comments.
You have TAC. Okay. Thank you.
All right, so Mr. Gordy?
All my questions have been answered.
Okay. Mr. Johnson?
I appreciate Mr. Smith allowing me to ask a few questions that he hasn't asked already. Mr. Fuqua, I too share some of the concerns of Commissioner Smith concerning the environmental issues and the design issues as well. I understand the focus so far has been on the access to the property, but I was on the commission back then, and I do recall there were other issues involved as well. And one of my questions I have for you, sir, is since we had the original hearing, it sounds like the acreage has changed. For example, originally I recall that we were talking about 16 acres of uplands, and that was also referenced in the master's quarter chancery master's report about the 16 acres. But yet earlier I heard you refer to 24 acres of upland. Is that
correct? I think the uplands is 23.8 acres. I think the Mr. Johnson, I think the different figures are, you have the gross figure, yep. You have the upland figure, and then there's a deduction because of the RPC formula where either 25% or the actual roads are deleted, and I think that's what gets it down to the 16.
Okay.
It wasn't upland. He didn't subtract down. If you give that number, that doesn't subtract out the non-tidal wetlands because that could still be counted as part of the density. So that's the reason for the difference.
The overall boundary has changed since the first original application was made as well.
The boundary of the wetlands?
The boundary of the outbounds of the property has changed as well.
How so?
I can check. I don't know if you can see it here, but right in here and right in here, the previous boundary went out into the waters and went out into the waters, which is really, it's not supposed to be out into the waters. You're supposed to follow the tide line. So the actual property got a little bit smaller.
So the property's smaller, not bigger.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying. How do we go from 16 acres of upland to 24 acres? Or was it always 24?
I think Mr. Lanay's got the answer, so.
I think when Mr. Fuqua gave that number, it's always been roughly the 16 acres. He wasn't subtracting out the non-tidal wetland portion.
Okay.
So and the way the density is calculated, you have to remove the state tidal wetland. So when he was given that 24-acre number, that didn't account for the fact that non-tidal wetlands are included in that, quote, upland area that you can use for the density calculation.
Because previously the density calculation, as I saw it, was still showing the 4.35 dwelling units, because that's what's referenced in your executive summary, I guess.
Yeah, my recollection was the original calculations were that the maximum permitted was in the neighborhood of 84 or 85. And now, as I calculate it now, it's the maximum would be 77.
Okay.
Not to muddy the waters. one thing that I believe it is 24 of uplands, because also what was not included in the original submittal was the area of the down here that they own.
Oh, that little piece down there.
Yeah, that was not included in the original calculation.
But you're not building on that.
No, but that's part of the property. Yes. Okay.
Does that mean I was right?
I'm not sure.
I'm still sounding that way.
I'm not quite sure either. I kind of concur with Commissioner Smith, and it seems like we're sticking as many buildings on this small, buildable parcel of ground as possibly can be, and that's that too is my concern, Mr. Smith, in terms of whether we're dealing with a superior design or not. But that aside, moving on, the 50-foot buffer, is that from all wetlands or just some of the wetlands?
It's from all tidal wetlands.
What about the other wetlands?
The non-tidal?
Yeah.
There's not a, well, I don't know, Jason, you...
It's not a requirement, but it's very close to that. The lines are very...
Or the non-tidals.
Not, like you said, I can hear that dark line is the tidal and that white line is the non-tidal.
Because I know you've been here in some of the recent public hearings that we've had, and the commission has basically has been going along the lines of 50 feet from any wetlands, not just the tidal versus non-tidal. But
Mr. Johnson, shouldn't that be in the ordinance if that's what's going to be imposed?
I understand that's part of the debate, sir. Moving on from that to the plus comments or your response to the plus comments, there was one issue, and I'm looking at page 6 of 16 for your reference, where there's a discussion about the reduction in bacteria. Dealing with the TMDLs, and that's in your section M.
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, what page was it?
6 of 16 in section M.
Gotcha.
Under the TMDLs, there's a discussion in there from DENREC about the reduction in bacteria, and you're saying there's no such criteria. Is that still the case?
I'd have to confirm that.
Good evening. For the record, Rich Polk with Caldera Properties. If there is a requirement, we've never done a computation for bacteria on any other project we've done. If there is a requirement, we will have to satisfy that. And that's almost like an engineering site plan type issue that's carried out at the time that an engineering plan is reviewed by DENREC. And we will coordinate with them and make sure that that is satisfied.
Okay. Thank you. And then, Mr. Fuqua, I'm going to refer to the state's response to your response to the plus comments. And I'm going to go to the, I guess, the last paragraph. And this is their letter dated May the 8th of 2008. And like the state, I have to say I, too, am concerned about the impact that this development is going to have on the environment, given the extensive nature of the wetlands that pretty much surrounds this property. The state, of course, their preference is that it remain undeveloped, due to those concerns. How might the developer address those issues and concerns of the state in terms of the impact on the environment, given the extensive wetlands that we do have, the close proximity to the water, let alone the nature of the area being wooded and all the native species that are that grow there, as well as the animals that live in this remote part of this area.
Well, the state could condemn it and buy it is how they would solve that problem. I mean, realistically. But the fact is that the letter, the timing of those letters, that was before we got back together to discuss the access way across the uplands. So that the information discussed in that letter was still dealing with what was going to involve filling the wetlands on a road access. All right, so it kind of predated where we are now. So as I mentioned before, a lot of the wetland impacts that the state was concerned about are no longer there, because as wanted, as desired by the state, by Denver, they wanted this access to be worked out that we are attempting to conclude. So that answers a lot of those questions. The other fact is, certainly it's unique, but whether it's a 500 acre parcel or a smaller parcel, the requirement is, and at this point in time, the only requirement is, a 50 foot buffer from tidal wetlands, and this site will comply with that requirement. So there will be that buffer from any tidal wetlands. And as far as on-site stormwater, again, Jason could go into more detail, but it's going to be done in a manner that's going to be most ecologically efficient and ecologically sensitive, for the site. The woodlands, again, most of the woods are down here around where that access road was going to be, which now will remain untouched. So that'll remain as is. And as Jason pointed out, there is a wooded section on here that will be affected, but really that's the main environmental impact. It's going to come in high ground. It's going to be built on high ground. It's going to meet the buffer requirements. And, it's going to be a beautiful development. So I don't know if, like I said, I think part of the comments in that plus response were based a little bit back from where we are at this point.
And shifting to site design, you made reference earlier about sidewalks on one side of the street. With the density that you're proposing of in excess of 4 units per acre, why wouldn't you be providing sidewalks on both sides?
If you approve this, I suspect we will be.
Boy, you just took all the fire out of me, sir.
Say, Mr. Johnson, do you have a follow-up
to
that?
I have another one, but I'll do like Mr. Smith. I'll let Mr. Burton ask any questions he might have.
Okay. Mr. Burton.
I might follow up a little bit on the sidewalks on both sides in regards to stormwater management. And that if my assumption is that the sidewalks on the one side would be some kind of a filtering device on the other side.
Again, I'll have to defer to Jason on that.
That is definitely an option, but the main impact of the one side, and we're talking about a dense development as it is just less impervious area is what the real benefit is. It provides grass, which does provide filtering. So, yes, there is an advantage to have only on one side.
But you'd have to store it somewhere, right?
You'd have to treat it here. We're dealing with tidal waters. Okay. Your storage requirements are not really applicable.
Okay, and the outfall would be?
We'd have to outfall into the wetlands.
Into the wetlands, okay. Okay. Staying with site design a little bit. The you mentioned the garage parking of two spaces, one undercover and one not.
Minimum of one under.
Minimum of one under. And lots or houses or condos 35 through 32 and number 26. Would their additional parking be the ones that I see down the street?
Yeah, there is parking in this space throughout the entire site. There's some here, here, here.
Where would say lot 34 or condo 34 park?
There's two spaces right here where they can park. There's two across the street where they can park.
If I could, it is the intent to have...
I'm sorry.
Rich Polk with Caldera again. It is the intent that every home have a two-car garage with enclosed spaces of two cars, enough to house two cars. So every one of these homes, irregardless of where they're located on the site, would have a two-car garage. There is, some of the homes also have the ability for surface parking between the face of the garage and the back of the sidewalk. The others that do not have overflow parking spread throughout the community. There's also overflow parking spread throughout the community for, in case some of the homeowners want to have a party, so that there would be places for their guests to park, so they're not parking on the street.
Okay, So those units that I mentioned would have a two-car inside parking.
Yes, all homes will have two-car garages.
Okay. Mr. Fuqua, you also mentioned that this would be central sewer and there would be a need for a pump station. Where would that be?
That is shown anticipated to be associated with the clubhouse in this area right here. It's this little rectangle, you probably can't see it. Mr. Burton, on that one, ultimately, county engineering is going to dictate, in accordance with its design standards, where the pump station is going to go.
Where it would go on this site, but it wouldn't be somewhere else, down the street, per se.
I mean, there may be upgrades to existing pump stations down the street, you know, in the Holtz Landing Sewer District, but that's all going to be county engineering required. So there's a whole process set up for reviewing that, establishing it, and there's agreements set up for who pays for it and how it's done.
Okay. Is the intention of this site to have a guardhouse? Is that what I see, a kind of a fence going across here?
That's part of the revised entrance. And
shown right here.
There would be a band station of some kind.
And or card? Probably card.
Card.
Again, Rich Polk with Caldera. As part of our discussions with Ms. Murray, the desire is, right now, existing Walters Bluff Road is a state right-of-way, state-maintained roadway for its entire length from Holtz Landing Road all the way down to the existing turnaround at the cul-de-sac. As part of this design, it would be the intent to privatize that roadway from the area, this location, and this would be an access easement, not a delled-out right-of-way. The areas that would be privatized would be placed behind a gate that would be motorized, kind of like the Easy Pass system, where the neighbors or the community would come in. If you owned a home, you would have an Easy Pass that would raise the arm. If you are a guest, there would be a keypad that you could ring the party that you were going to. They can then dial in a number and open the gate. Emergency personnel have kind of perfected this system with all the neighborhoods that are right there in North Bethany. And we've talked to them at length about other developments, and they've got some set criteria. The gate has to go up by an alarm. It has to go up if they punch in a special code. It also has to be manually operated. If they can't do it by that because there's no electricity, there's a battery backup for 24 hours. If it goes beyond that, they have the ability to get out and basically just with a wrench that they carry that's unique. Well, it's kind of unique to gates, but they all carry the same one, that they can actually raise or move the gate to get in. And that's familiar with what they've done everywhere else.
And again, basically the land on either side here is DMV Limited Partnership, which is Mrs. Murray's property.
And that was really a request of Mrs. Murray as well, to limit the amount of people that are right now driving down and turning around and coming out. Give them a safe place to come, turn around, and go back, but not actually enter and disturb her use of the enjoyment of the property.
Okay, and that's a plan for a boulevard type deal with it. So it would be a center island, center.
Correct. It would be a center raised island. It would be landscaped for its entire length all the way through. Again, to further kind of help break up the roadway and actually add some trees back into the area.
If this roadway was approved and the agreement was meet, would this easement go away then, this yellow tail, as you call it?
Well, it's part of the property, so technically we own it. I don't know what the plans are, if there are any that's even been discussed.
It's actually part of the property. It's not necessarily an easement. We were going to place a easement through it for access to the site. But if this is, once this is determined through here, we would be, much like all the wetlands on the property, we would be placing this in a conservation easement so that it would be perpetually preserved.
Okay, so there are no plans to use that ever as the service
road that's mentioned in here? Absolutely not. This would be allowed to be preserved in its current state.
Okay. No further questions.
All right, sir. Mr. Lank?
We've been going round and round with the issue over the 50-foot setback or buffer, and And we've seen difficulty on other sites whereby the silt fences are being placed in the buffer zone and the land's being disturbed within the 50-foot buffer. And would the developer object to the requirement that the silt fence be placed at the 50-foot setback from the wetlands, wherever that line is?
Developer wouldn't.
We've had problems with other sites being disturbed.
No, I'd have no objection to that. In fact, that's usually what we do. In fact, on our other projects, we actually go 5 feet further in just to make sure that through successive maintenance of that silt fence that there's no disturbance.
Yeah, we asked that question because a lot of your buildings are right at the 50-foot setback.
That's fine. We can build them from inside.
Okay. That's all I have.
All right, sir. Mr. Katz?
Just two things. Not to belabor the issue, but I think there is in your documents that have been submitted, I think there is a debate as to whether there's 23 acres or 16 acres of upland. And I think you need to go through and make sure that there's some consistency in there. I can see how you get to 23, but there's also a document that says 16.18, so I think we need to resolve that issue. If it's approved and if it gets to site plan, I think we need to have that resolved. The other, again, for the record, you referenced the April 10 letter from DENREC. Specifically in that letter, it references an approved wetland line shown on, quote, state title wetlands exhibit for Riverview, Sussex County, Delaware, dated March 19, 2008. I didn't see that in the file, but I take it from your representation that all of the drawings that we've subsequently received are consistent with that title drawing referenced in the letter.
Yes, that's certainly my understanding. Everything was copied from that.
I just wanted to clarify that for the record, since it doesn't officially appear in what we have. Thank you.
Robertson.
I want to follow up on that density issue. I think I've got a handle on it, and I want to see if I do. Under the density calculations on the site plan, you end up with a net development area after you subtract the wetlands. Of 23.819 acres, and that's in the data column on the site plan. The way I think what you intended to say, and I want to see if I got this straight, is the neighborhood plan for Riverview is organized within the 16.18 acre upland portion of the site that's currently farmed. So you're trying to say that's...
Is that where it comes from? Okay.
Because it's confusing the way it's worded. I want to make sure that, like Mr. Kautz and...
Yeah, I think the 16 acres is the upland, the center of the site. For the RPC calculation, again, the existing law, you take the gross, you subtract the state wetlands only, and you subtract the actual road right-of-way, or 25%, whichever is less. And that's how you arrive at that 23-acre figure. And that's where the density max comes from. Again, that's just per ordinance.
Because it is. I have to admit, the way it's worded, you have to read it about three times to figure out that 16.18 acre is more descriptive of where the location of the buildings are, not any density calculation. Okay. The next question I have is something that you brought up a moment ago. I understand the issue with the easement, but now it sounds like, in addition to that, there's the issue of getting an abandonment of a state right-of-way. So almost what I'm hearing is the easement may not be the end of the story. You still got to go through the process of abandoning a state right-of-way. How does that affect this plan?
Well, really, technically the easement is the main thing. I mean, the easement could be done without the abandonment because that's a public road right now. So, it could come down here and then just have an easement. So that can be done either way. But again, at least my experience, where a property owner owns all the land surrounding a road, so the road would serve no purpose other than that property owner, that the state doesn't have any concern about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's been experience that I've seen, too. But you still have to go through that process.
You got to go through the process, but I don't think, I don't think it would be. I think it can be done through an administrative abandonment where DelDOT just does it. You don't have to go to court on that. They have a public hearing, particularly where it's a one property owner. And again, because there's really no one to protest because it doesn't go anywhere. But again, that is not, that doesn't affect the easement. The easement can still get us to the property, whether or not the road's abandoned.
That's all the questions I had. Thanks, Mr. Wheeling.
All right, sir. We thank you, and we thank you, Mr. Fuquay. If you'll take a seat nearby, and we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of change of zone 1651 Caldera Properties, Indian River 5, LLC? Is there anyone in favor? Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Again, for the record, my name is Mike Malkowitz, attorney for Ms. Murray and the corporation that owns the adjacent land that the applicant is before you tonight on. I wanted to just make a couple of corrections for the record. I believe that Mr. Fuquay indicated that the property was inherited at a certain point by Mrs. Murray's parents or her mother. Mrs. Murray informs me that in 1936, her mother and her husband at that time purchased the property. That's back in 1936, just for the record. I'd also like, if we could, to make it clear on the record, either by designating it as a particular exhibit or a reference, anything that the applicant wants to say it is. There's two drawings that were submitted, and Mr. Fuqua appropriately indicated that there was a possible uplands road that was discussed, and now there's a second one. And we want to make sure that the one that's in front of the commission for consideration is, in fact, the second one.
This is a copy of that.
For the commission's benefit, that was the document that Mr. Fuqua, I think, handed to us, and actually that was a question I was going to ask.
Okay.
If you could explain the difference between the two, that was something that I'm not sure that I got. Because, I mean, it looks like all the buildings and everything are the same. It's just the roadway that's a little bit different.
Yeah, the this road, there's a rec facility down here. This road came right in at the rec facility.
Okay. On the previous?
On the what one. Was filed here is the second application.
Right.
Two units to the north of the road.
Okay.
The road has been moved further south. Okay. They're going to affect the south end of that. So it comes in down here. Here's the rec facility. So all those units are north of that access road.
90-degree
right. Okay.
Sweep.
So it appears as though it's further away from the neighbor's house and buildings. Is what it appears.
Yeah, and that was done at the request of Mrs. Murray. It had several factors to it, I believe.
Mr. Fuqua, for the record, just to clarify, the one that, so it's in the minutes, is the one that's dated July 9, 2008. Is that the one?
That what we, can I just mark one? Is so.
Concept Plan A, okay.
Is that what you have, Mr. Lang?
I have it, Concept Plan A.
Thanks, Mr. Fuqua.
Need it. Yesterday.
And, the only other thing that we wanted to make sure was on the record is that there was a question asked about what would happen with the current wetlands, which is basically what we always refer to as the pipe stem, the narrow portion that the road and the bridge originally were going to be going on. That is part of our discussions right now that are ongoing. What is going to happen to that, whether it's given by easement or whatever later to Ms. Murray, or whether it goes into a conservation easement or whatever. But that is part of the discussions. Having said all of that for the record, I wanted to indicate to the commission that Mr. Fuqua has accurately represented that we have had serious ongoing discussions. Mrs. Murray has gone out and hired her own engineering people. She's gone out and hired an actual real estate attorney. Other than myself, to deal with all documents that have to be drafted. Someone is very experienced in that. And she's also hired consultants to deal with this, these issues. And there's been several meetings, several phone calls, lots of faxes, lots of emails back and forth. And we're near an agreement. There were discussions about even possibly not having tonight's hearing, but it was felt that in the spirit of cooperation and the good faith that's shown by the applicant in that they're only presenting a proposal for the Uplands Road tonight. We respect that, and we have no problem with the hearing going forward. The rationale for Ms. Murray for doing this is two reasons. One, it protects the wetlands. Some of the commissioners who have been here and heard this for 3 or 4 years ago, that was her concern. It's her concern today. This proposal absolutely protects the wetlands. That's the key ingredient for Ms. Murray. And secondly, there isn't an acknowledgement by Ms. Murray for the safety of the community. Residents, in the event of an issue, a safety issue, a weather issue, they have access. They don't have to worry about trespassing and so forth. It provides an opportunity for people to safely get where they got to get in the case of a weather event. Okay. Thank you.
Question for you, sir. If you were just give us some notion of how much longer you think it will take for you guys to reach some kind of agreement.
Specifically, what happened was Ms. Murray hired an engineering company, and they agreed to come up with some cost estimates that we're looking at. In other words, what would the road cost to build through the wetlands versus what's the cost going to be to build over the uplands. That particular engineer that we respect, Ms. Murray respects, went on vacation. He just returned on Monday. And we're being told that within the next week, they ought to have some numbers to us on those costs. We're very close. I'm not blowing smoke up here. We're either going to get it done probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks, or we're not going to get it done.
So 30 days anyway, you would think?
Yes.
You would think. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else who would like to speak in favor? Okay, is there anyone that would like to speak in opposition to change of zone number 1651, Caldera Properties, Indian River 5, LLC? Anyone on the commission have any questions?
I do.
Yes, sir. Mr. Smith?
Thank you. Prompted by what Mr. Lank's question, Mr. Polk, I believe it was, about the silt fence. Jessica Watson came before us 7 or 8 months ago, and she showed the commission a PowerPoint presentation. She brought us up to speed on what was known as a super silt fence. Is that something that would come into play on this project as a possibility?
By all means. In fact, that would be a requirement of DENREC, that we install super silt fence along the buffer line, and that must stay in place until the entire development is both built out and stabilized. And we would have to maintain it throughout the development process.
And then remove it?
We would remove it only when the upstream or up gradient areas are fully stabilized. And really only after the Conservation District inspector gave us the okay to remove it. It's not something I can just go out and remove.
Understood.
I need a written document from them.
She had mentioned that one of the problems that the district has is that the fence never gets removed and it stays there and just stays there. Not on your projects, but just as a part of her presentation to bring us up to speed, some of the difficulties, which prompted a question on the out of the plus. They're talking about they would like to see easements or access for equipment should the drainage or the stormwater management require periodic maintenance. This is in their plus response. Ms. Watson had told us that can be a problem for people, that stormwater management systems operate well initially, and then they 5-7 years down the road or whatever, they get clogged, they need some maintenance. Is your plan going to provide for access for the adequate equipment to ensure that the stormwater management?
Yes, sir. In fact, if you're over here, as Mr. Palkowicz was saying, the majority of the water treatment on the site will be through what's known as sand filters, which are essentially a two-chamber concrete system that gets placed at the edge of the roadway. And it works by the water going into the first chamber, any of the gravel and heavy material would settle out, and then it would pond up and flow over into a second chamber where it would flow by gravity through sand. It would then go from the bottom of the sand out via pipes directly into what's considered an adequate outfall by DENREC. The water would be treated. They're very efficient in removing pollutants. And the water that would then be entering into the wetlands would be only this treated water. As far as maintenance goes, the facilities are immediately adjacent to the roadways. They're maintained by basically pumper trucks and by personnel that would be able to pull right up to the roadway and get right to the facility. The outfall itself would have to be placed in an easement all the way to the wetlands so that maintenance personnel would have the ability to go over that. Also, all of the common areas in the site, the homeowners association would be responsible for maintaining all of these facilities in accordance with state law. The homeowners association would also own all of the common areas. So they could essentially grant themselves right to go across that property.
Will they be provided a budget as to what those expenses?
By all means. There are a couple of companies within the area that maintain sand filters. One of them is Todd Fritchman of Envirotech, and he is very well versed in maintaining this type of a system and is maintaining it for several communities in Rehoboth as well as Bethany right now. And we would work with him to establish a budget that would become part of the condo association fees that every homeowner would pay to fund his contract to make sure that they are properly maintained.
Thank you.
If I could also come back to one issue about the silt fence. Prior to doing any development on the property, we're required to post a performance bond that would stay in place until everything is finished. That performance bond has several components, one of which is an erosion and sediment component that is held by the county but is only released when the conservation district is satisfied that everything has been finished. So, you know, while I can stand here today and say that we will remove the super silt fence at the conclusion of the project, I have a financial incentive as well to do that because at the end, the only way I can get off that bond and get that removed and stop paying for that bond is to actually finish everything and finish it in accordance with the plans and state law.
But you're going to want to do that anyhow because you're stating that you're designing this with the best interest of the environment and everything in
that
mind. So you'd even let them keep the money if they had to get that out of there, right? Will you be posting any markers to let the people know where and when the wetland stops, or is it when your flip-flops get wet, that's it?
No, absolutely. What we would do is, as part of this, there would be a comprehensive landscaping plan. And what we've done in the past is to put up they're about 2 to 3 feet tall markers with triangular kind of signs that say help protect, you know, beyond this point is a regulated wetland, help protect our fragile economy or ecosystem, and don't go into these areas. And we would plant those typically every 50 feet closer in areas where you can't see from one sign to another. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we've done that as well in some other communities, and it's worked very well.
When I was coming to the meeting tonight, I took a trip by to go see a site, Cool Spring Farms, which led me along Route 1 between the Coast Guard old life-saving station. And there's been a big effort there to put up a barrier fence for the diamondback terrapin. I saw some reference, but does that have any impact, that habitat or the viability of that species, on this ground in this project, Mr. Lanay?
Maybe Ed can address that better.
I mentioned that because when I saw that, there's about 5 miles of fence that some organization or something keeps and maintains along Highway 1.
Yes, they put that fence in. The diamondback terrapin is a species that, it's not an endangered species, but it's considered a state rare species. And it, you know, it inhabits salt marsh areas and tidal estuaries. And however, you know, for a breeding site, you know, it'll select going on to a non-tidal wetland or an area above regular tidal influence to basically scrape out a nest. The silt fence you see along Route 1 was put in by DENREC. And, you know, essentially they were trying to minimize the event of a turtle actually coming up from the marsh and deciding to scurry across the road, maybe to the beach area. Not that the turtle would necessarily go far, but, you know, they had recorded some losses due to getting hit by vehicles. Mainly you're going to find the turtle nests on this site because, again, you're coming from the salt marsh and the land becomes more and more elevated. You have kind of a shrubby area of non-tidal wetlands that adjoins the tidal wetlands. And, you know, in general, that's where the turtle would probably stop because it'd be up above the tide in terms of where they would, you know, sculpt that nest. Though, you know, it's quite possible, and it's happens all the time, that terrapins will go up on a lawn area and actually scrape out a nest at those locations. So, you know, the turtles are maybe not the brightest species in the world. They're pretty unselective as where they might put the nest. I just think probably you wouldn't want to have a nest, a fence, you know, a similar type of thing, because you don't have the situation where you're going to have a lot of high-speed traffic as you do on Route 1. Because actually, by putting the fence in, you may limit the ability of the turtles to come inland. Mm-hmm. So I think on this site, it would be best to just kind of leave well enough alone. And, you could put a sign or a speed limit, or just, you know, have people be aware that, you know, that's a species they might see through some sort of homeowner's guidance. But that's, I think, all I would recommend.
I wasn't advocating a fence. I wish I hadn't gone on Route 1. I got in so much traffic, five turtles passed me. I was there by Kmart. But that's another story. That's all the questions I have.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
And looking at your original plan and then the revised plan, where would you anticipate your stormwater management ponds being located, or how would you handle the stormwater?
There's really, because the receiving waters are tidal in nature, there's only a requirement, as Mr. Palkbrook said, to treat water quality.
Okay.
And really, that's what I was talking about with the sand filters immediately adjacent to the roadway. The roadway would be kind of up and down so that it would take small sections of the runoff, take it to an area where it could be treated, and then release into the wetlands at distinct points throughout the community. So there would not really be a need for a stormwater management pond per se, the way that perhaps a larger community more inland would require.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite